at 6:20. This is KERI News. I'm Justin Martin. 15 years ago this week, on a clear blue Texas morning, the space shuttle Columbia re-entered Earth's atmosphere after a successful 16-day science mission in space. But after communications were not regained with Columbia, it became apparent something with the shuttle was terribly wrong. The shuttle disintegrated over East Texas skies, killing all 7 astronauts on board. Here are the voices of 2 people whose lives were forever changed by what happened on February 1st, 2003.
My name is Jonathan Clark. I was a NASA shuttle flight surgeon during the Columbia mishap in 2003, and my wife Laurel was a mission specialist on that Columbia mission, her first mission. I was at Kennedy Space Center, several miles from the launch site. That's where I was with my son. So we were all excited and, you know, no idea whatsoever that things were going to go awry.
My name is Evelyn Husband Thompson. I'm the widow of Rick Husband. Rick was the commander of the space shuttle Columbia that did not make it home safely on February 1st, 2003. Rick had recorded devotional tapes for Lauren Matthew to listen to all during his mission. So on that morning, on February 1st, we brought the tapes with us. And so they watched the last devotional tape. And basically Rick said to him, "Hey, I'm real excited. We're going to land today. And I'm looking forward to seeing you guys and can't wait to be home." Just told him how much he loved him and how proud he was of him and prayed with them. And so they each watched their tape and we got ready and we headed out and kind of a big convoy over to the landing strip with the families.
You know, the shuttle lands actually, you know, to the second or near second. So the clock is counting down and it was around 9 a.m. Eastern time. And usually you'll hear a sonic boom a minute or two before landing, and that comes when the shuttle breaks through the sound barrier. Sonic boom is a very distinctive, it's very similar to a double-barreled shotgun. It's a boom. No sonic boom, you know, and that should usually happen within a minute or two of the countdown. And then the clock goes to zero, and then it starts counting up again. And it's like, okay, that's not right. Everybody is hustled to their cars, and everybody, there's still people in the stands, and everybody else is standing around, you know, like, what's going on? They get us back to the crew quarters, and, you know, the head of the astronaut office, he comes in and he goes, "We do not have definitive knowledge of what happened, but what we do know is that there was a breakup, and the crew probably didn't survive." So there was just this, you know, horrific wailing from everybody, the kids, the parents. It was, I mean, I still remember that as probably the most, you know, maybe, you know, one of the most horrible moments I could have ever imagined, particularly because, you know, my son is like, "What do you mean, Mom? What's going on? When's Mom getting back?" You know, that kind of thing.
They loaded us up in cars and rushed us back to crew quarters, which is where we were supposed to be reunited with our loved ones. And it's where they had stayed before the launch. And so each of them had a bedroom with their name on the door and their stuff was in their room, clothes and personal items. And we just went into Rick's room and just all 3 of us laid on his bed.
Photographer Rania Matar makes a series of portraits, young girls and posing, teenagers in the bedrooms, mothers with their daughters. Her subjects all live in Lebanon, where Matar was born, or in Massachusetts, where she now lives. And they're all on display at a retrospective at the Amon Carter Museum of American Art. In our weekly State of the Arts conversation, Matar tells KERI's Ann Bothwell that these women have more in common than you might think.
Rania Matar, welcome to KERA.
Thank you for having me.
You've moved from photographing young girls to adolescents, to mothers and their daughters, really the whole life cycle of women. What is it that attracts you to that?
So ironically, I started with the adolescents before the prepubescent girls, just because I was fascinated with my teenage daughter when she was 15 and started this whole project. And then as I was getting done with this work, my younger daughter, who was 12, was kind of, she was a late bloomer. Her body was changing and her whole demeanor and attitudes were changing at the same time. And I realized that that's such a fleeting moment, and I became interested in photographing that. The mother and daughter happened because, again, my daughter left, when my older daughter left to go to college, I realized that, you know, up to that point, I thought I'm also 25 years old, right? And then when she left, it kind of made me realize that as she's leaving home, my role as a mother was about to change. And it hit me that now I'm a middle-aged woman. What was beautiful about the exhibition is it's the first time it was all presented together as one project. And it made me realize that it's all about basically womanhood.
What have you learned from these series?
First is that all these girls, even the ones who looked like they were tough and had an attitude, were actually so vulnerable and so approachable. And they probably were awful to their mothers, but I could see the beauty in each and every one of them. And it made me understand my kids so much better. So that was something interesting that happened. The other thing is I was starting this project in the United States, and I realized that I was exactly those girls 25 years earlier in a different country, in a different culture. But that universality hit me then, that even though every single person is an individual, we're all, like, as women, going through the same changes. So this became consistent in the rest of my work, where I kind of owned up to it. This is my identity. I'm from both cultures. It's important for me to photograph both.
It's interesting how similar the girls seem and how it can be difficult to tell whether they are in Massachusetts or they're in Lebanon.
I mean, some of the differences are not between the Middle East and the U.S. A girl in Beirut, in a nice area of Beirut, or a girl in a refugee camp were very different. But a girl in a suburb of Beirut or a suburb of Boston, sometimes you can't tell the difference. And it became important to me to focus on that.
You often ask your subjects not to smile. Why is that?
You know, I think we're programmed, especially in this country more than in the Middle East, to, as soon as the camera goes up, you smile for the camera. But that's what people want to give you. And I'm trying to get beyond that. And when people are not smiling, there's so much more that's there. I'm not going after the what you call the deadpan face. I'm trying to see the emotions that you could see when somebody's not smiling. And when people don't smile, they start thinking about what they do with their bodies and their arms and their hands. And you see a lot of their identity expressed a certain way. I'm trying to get something more than what they're willing to give me intentionally, if that makes sense.
How do you choose your subjects?
I realized early on that I work much better with people I don't know. With the people I know are more self-conscious, and I get more self-conscious. Once I realized that, it was almost liberating, because I then started stopping people everywhere. And I had a whole system about how I went about it. For one, I'm little and I'm not too scary looking. And often I would have my daughters with me. So it kind of made things a little easier. I don't know how I pick people, but there's something about somebody, I would see it from the corner of my eye. And I'm like, oh my God, I need to photograph her. And it got to the point where I'd be with my family and they could tell. And they were like, oh no, please no. And I was like, yes. And I would say 95% of the time it works.
Rania Matar, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you so much for having me.
And our image is on at the Amon Carter Museum in Fort Worth until June. Learn more at artandseek.org. It's 6:30. This is KERA News.
Marketplace is supported by